We are joined right now by a Journo's Journo. This guy is one of the best. A senior writer for ESPN, a New York Times bestselling author, author of It's Better to Be Feared, which was just released. It's out in paperback now. It's available online and in all bookstores. I want to say the hardback version also was a New York Times bestseller. Seth Wickersham is my guest. Seth, great to have you back. How are you?
What's up, man? How are you?
I am great. It's good to have you on the show. Thanks so much. Listen, you and I talked when the hardback version dropped. Great, great book. Obviously, a lot has transpired since then, and there is some new material in the paperback version. Can you give us an idea? What is new in the paperback version? What have you uncovered?
Yeah, I think that one of the most interesting things that's happened since the book came out is obviously Tom Brady's 2022 year. I mean, for someone who's been just been a model of consistency and low drama for most of his two decades in the public eye, this has been a very atypical year for Tom Brady. Remember, he started to get a little disenchanted with the way the Bucs were being run towards the end of last season. They lose that playoff game to the Rams when they, you know, isolate Cooper Kupp on a safety at the very end after he'd helped rally them back. And then he retired. He, you know, and remember, my colleagues, Jeff Darlington and Adam Schefter, broke news that he was going to retire. He said he wasn't, then he did. And then a week after that, he talks about unretiring. And so what I try to get into is that decision a little bit, the forces that led to it, and then obviously what led him to come back only a month later and Bruce Arians, you know, moved from the executive suite, of course now he's like back on the sideline last week and not exactly a calm presence on the sideline either. But I try to get into that and exactly like where his headspace was during that month away.
Seth Wickersham is joining us. So a lot to unpack there. There's probably like 10 follow-up questions in that alone. But what about that? Why don't we start, Seth, with the retirement itself? Based on your reporting, where was he with his headspace? Why did he, in fact, retire when he did?
Well, look, remember he said, it's not always about what I want. Sometimes it's about what my family wants. And I think that there's a lot of truth to that. I mean, look, he's ventured into a lot of different businesses, trying to get that transition for when he does walk away to be as smooth as possible. And then he's pulled in a lot of different directions. That said, I think that he knew last year that the Bucs weren't as buttoned up as they should have been going into the playoffs. And I think that the way they lost that playoff game had to really stick with him because, again, even though he was unhappy his last couple of years in New England, the Patriots prepared for games to the nth degree. And at Tampa Bay, it was a little bit like going from Harvard to Florida State. He wanted something different for his last couple of years. But then once he starts competing, he knows the right way. He knows the right way to prepare for games. And the Bucs, he knew, weren't really looking to repeat or weren't prepared to repeat. And sure enough, they didn't. And I think that people around him started to notice in, you know, late December, January, that this might be it. But of course, it only lasted a week. And now this is something I don't know firsthand, but it had to have been hard to be his family, have them kind of be the justification for him walking away. And then a month later, he says, you know, after a month away, I've realized that my place is on the field. That must have been kind of awkward for them.
Had to have been. Seth Wickersham is joining us. He's the author of It's Better to Be Feared. It's released now on paperback. It is available online and in all bookstores. I mean, Seth, the way you lay that out, I don't want to say it's all Bruce Arians, but how much of it had to do with Bruce Arians? I mean, is that a matter of they were not buttoned up? They were not prepared. It was not like it was in New England. And is it because of Arians and that culture that he set up and the way he prepared his team?
Yeah, it's a different person. I mean, and, you know, I think their personal relationship is very good. But, like, again, people had told me just about Brady not feeling like that they were as tight as they needed to be going into the playoffs. And then sure enough, you know, they get down against the Rams. They rally them back. It looks like they have all this momentum and they lose it in the last, you know, 44 seconds, whatever it was. And so, I think that one of the most interesting things also about his when he walked away is, you know, these rumors that he would consider playing for another team came up almost immediately. Obviously, the Dolphins were kind of in the mix. San Francisco was in the mix. And I think it was interesting that the Bucs kind of played this pretty cool. Like, they didn't panic, and they kind of knew deep down inside that he would probably return. I don't know exactly when to use the phrase called his bluff, because I don't think that's quite it, but it was kind of a version of that, where they knew that he needed a little bit of a distance and a little bit of a cooling off period, and then he'd kind of work his way back to wanting to play. And, I mean, again, pretty amazing for a guy who's been so, you know, out of so low key and not very dramatic to have all this stuff happen. And we haven't even gotten into the stuff that's happened the last 2 months.
Right. I mean, for instance, Seth, what did you make when he came back? First of all, I mean, what did you make of him leaving in the middle of camp for 11 days? And I don't even want to hear that he doesn't need that practice time. That's beside the point. That is just so out of character for a guy like that. What do you make of him leaving? And then what did you think when you saw him upon his return looking as miserable as he looked?
He doesn't look happy. And I think that's one of the things that a lot of people close to him have noticed, and a lot of fans and a lot of just, you know, casual observers, is that, like, for someone who loves the game as much as he does, he does not look very happy right now. And it just can't be a good time. I mean, obviously, like, it's the beginning of the season. They're getting some irons, you know, some wrinkles ironed out on offense. But, I mean, there is almost on a daily basis articles in People, in CNN, and the New York Post about the state of his marriage. And obviously, it's something that they've been very public about over the years. I write about a lot of, look, what I was trying to do with the book was take readers as close as I possibly could to the forces and the factors that led to the greatness of Tom Brady and Bill Belichick and show the cost of it. I didn't want to give like a hokey sanitized version. I wanted to try to give a full 360 degree view at it. And the cost for Tom Brady has clearly been, along with his unprecedented career, has been a lot of the strain that he's put on his family. And I think that you're seeing some of that play out right now.
I mean, Seth, do you think that he picked his football family over his actual family? Is that just not fair? Is that too simplistic? Or is that essentially what he did when he came back?
I think it's too simplistic. And, you know, I'm not sure that his wife, you know, was so opposed to him coming back, although she's been vocal that, you know, she doesn't want him to get more injured and she wouldn't mind it if he was around the house more and helping more with the kids and more present. But again, he's just got so many outside things going on. All of these things that we always talk about how athletes leave the game and they don't have any transition. They don't have an off ramp. He's got a lot of off ramps going, and all of that stuff just requires his time. And I think that, like, you'd have to wonder, like, you know, when does it end? And he's just got a lot on his plate right now. All of the things that he asked for, by the way, but he does have a lot on his plate. And as you can tell, he just doesn't seem like himself out there.
Not at all. Seth Wickersham is joining us. Also, Seth, in the book, you get into the dynamics, of course, obviously, about the relationship between Brady and Belichick. What can you tell us about the private meeting the two of them had following last year's Patriots-Bucks game? I know it's a, quote, private meeting, but what kind of insight can you share? What was discussed?
You know, their relationship didn't end in New England on very good terms. There was a lot of friction over the last couple of years. I wrote about it. Stemming on everything, others people did too, stemming from everything from Brady's desire to have a contract that would take him until age 45, which he is right now, to the role of Alex Guerrero, his trainer and best friend, the role of Jimmy Garoppolo, and, you know, the fact that Bill didn't want to trade him and was very invested in him. So when Brady left and he comes back for that great game last year, the Patriots versus the Bucks, which I just thought was one of the best games I'd ever seen, just so rare that you get to see two astute football minds go at it like that, especially to the very end, like that game did. About 20 minutes after that game, Belichick goes to meet with Tom Brady privately. And later on, I was able to learn that, like, look, that was a great meeting of mutual respect. I think that while there isn't always a lot of like between the two men, there is a lot of love. And I think that that said, I think that they also left the meeting feeling like their relationship was, you know, too complicated, and they'd gone through so many things that, you know, it wasn't going to get tidied up and fixed in a 20-minute conversation. I think that they're a divorced couple who have kind of agreed to be civil for the best sake of everybody, but there's no chance that they're going to get remarried.
I actually love that line you just said, that there was a lot, not a lot of like, but a lot of love, and they got divorced. They stayed together for the sake of everybody, but they can't get remarried. Is there any update? Is there any change in that relationship between the two since then?
I don't think so. I mean, I think they're both conditioned to move on. And I think that, like I said, again, I mean, I think there was a lot of, like, you know, pride hurt, I guess, maybe on the Brady side over his departure. Remember, you know, he wanted to stay in New England. August of 2019, he and Bill have 6 Super Bowls together. He's trying to negotiate a contract. He gets so frustrated. He almost leaves training camp. He was so frustrated. He ends up signing a 2-year deal, which was really a 1-year deal with a raise. And 48 hours after that deal was announced, he and Gisele Bündchen put their Boston area house on the market. And, you know, to leave the way that he did, where they kind of opened the door for him to walk out and he walked out and then go and win the Super Bowl. I think that even before that Patriots-Bucks game a year ago, you started to hear people on his side, Alex Guerrero, his dad, Tom Brady Sr., you know, start to vent a little bit about the way that things ended in New England and the way that Tom felt treated by Bill Belichick.
So, Seth, before you go, if that's the way that ended and that did not end well, how do you think it ends for Belichick? For instance, you've covered this franchise for the better part of 20 years. Ultimately, do you think that he informs Bob Kraft when he's had enough? Or is Kraft going to one day have a very difficult conversation where he goes to Bill Belichick and says, it's time to go in a new direction?
I think both are on the table. I would be surprised if it ever got to the point where Robert Kraft had to talk to him about that. I mean, you think about how much that man, Bill Belichick, has meant for that franchise, how much he's increased everybody's stature, their wealth. In my opinion, he has earned the right to walk away whenever he wants, regardless of how good or bad the Patriots are. Now, Belichick says he's year to year, and I think that he's probably being right with that. But I do think that, like, now that the all-time win record is in sight, it wouldn't surprise me if he tried to hang on a couple more years and get that record before he walked away and leave the franchise in good shape, by the way. I mean, he has an enormous amount of pride. He would never, like, when Bill Walsh retired, Bill Walsh wanted the 49ers to kind of secretly fall off a cliff. Instead, they go, you know, whatever it was, 14-2 and win the Super Bowl. He doesn't, Belichick is not the same way. He wants to leave that team in really good shape so that whoever his successor is picks up a good program. And one of Bill's legacies could always be that he made decisions that he felt were in the best long-term interest of the team, and that was proof of it.
Hey, Seth, let me follow that really quickly. What was that about Bill Walsh? Was he just like that? Did things not end well? Was he complicated like that? That's an amazing thing you just said.
Yeah, he was very complicated. And, you know, I think he thought that when he handed the team over to George Seifert, they were going to fall flat. And instead, you know, that might have been their best team. You know, they go and beat the Denver Broncos in the Super Bowl. But, yeah, well, I mean, I think Walsh was just different. I just think that, like, he had burned himself out, remember. It was different than Belichick. He had burned himself out, and when he walked away, I think that he just had so much pride in what he had built that it felt unfinished. And he was kind of secretly hoping that that team would not succeed as well without him. Of course, they ended up succeeding very well, and, you know, Bill tried to – his legacy just felt unfinished, and, of course, that led to him writing that 700-page book that cost hundreds of thousands of dollars on Amazon that every coach owns and considers like a coaching Bible, because he felt like he just had to get all of the thoughts in his head, all of that he had put into the organization. He wanted people to know what he had done.
Different dude. All right, so finally, you just said that he burned himself out. By the way, how has Bill Belichick not burned himself out?
It's amazing. You know, so I spent a lot of time this offseason with Sean McVay because he clearly had come close to burning himself out at age 36. And, you know, I wanted to get inside, like, again, the cost of what he's done. And Sean McVay, for as hard as he works, kind of knows that he can't do what Bill does. And if Bill's the standard, he doesn't know whether, like, he'll be able to keep it up, because there's a part of Sean McVay that thinks, hey, look, I'm going to do this for another couple years and then walk away. And then another part of him is like, look, I'm going to be doing this when I'm 60. And you're going to be saying, like, how in the world are you still coaching? McVay calls it competitive stamina. And he's just in awe. He's gotten to know Bill a little bit over the years, getting drinks or a coffee here or there. And he just talks about Bill's astounding competitive stamina and how he doesn't know, frankly, if he's got that in him. It's really amazing how Bill, you know, at age 70, keeps up this workload.
It's incredible. Him, Nick Saban at the same age, does the same thing. I wonder, Seth, and I read that piece. It's a great piece. You did spend time with him. You got great access with McVay. It's a great, great piece. It's a great read. I would finally say, I didn't mean to keep it this long, but this is so good. I wonder if Belichick, if he had been offered $20 million a year or more at some point, if he would have that same competitive stamina, the money that McVay would look at from a streaming company or something else.
Bill and Tom are two very different people, but the one thing that they share is that I don't think there's anything that makes them feel more alive, more whole, more like their essential self than competing on Sundays. And I think they both know that maybe it's, you know, spectacularly unhealthy in other areas of their life, but it's something that they need on a very primal level. And so, like, it wouldn't surprise me if the networks had come after Bill and offered him even more money at some point, or at least seen if he was ever interested in doing that. But I mean, Bill, he's made a lot of money over his career, but he is a coach, and it's the only thing he's been doing since he graduated from college. And I just, you know, maybe later in life he might do something different. I don't know. But I mean, I think that's where he feels, like I said, most like his essential self. And the same with Tom Brady.
He is a senior writer for ESPN. He is a New York Times bestselling author. This book is an amazing book. It's Better to Be Feared. I read it in its hardback version. Great, great book. It is now out in paperback. It is available online. It's available in bookstores. There are new chapters. There's an epilogue as well. And the hardback version was a New York Times bestseller. Seth, didn't mean to keep you so long, but what can I tell you, man? You're a great guest and a great journo. Really appreciate you. Great to have you on the show, Seth. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, man. Thank you.
Seth Wickersham, lots of information.